In an ever-changing world, Off Hollywood Media presents a voice of truth and inspiration, resonating a vibration of love and understanding, illuminating new paths for new directions, as we, as one, strive for higher and higher levels of consciousness, always remembering life changes. And now, your host, our MC, our master of change, Filippo Voltaggio.
Ciao, everyone. Wow, this is so exciting, actually, since I'm on the phone today, having to call the show in and not in front of the computer and the studio and all that stuff. I got to hear things that I normally don't hear while I was on the phone. And what I heard was somebody snapping their fingers while our song was going on there, the intro, and that was the engineer. So I like that. We do have a snappy song. Just Believe is the name of that song. We haven't mentioned that since our first or second show, actually. So if you're interested, actually, it's on our website at lifechanges.ws, or if it's not, it should be and will be and all that good stuff. And that was written by Marco Missinato, Barry Bruder, and myself. We wrote the words, and Marco Missinato wrote all the music, and we had a lot of fun, all three of us, singing that, and that's who you hear every week at the beginning of our show and at the end of our show. So, Seth, thank you for snapping along and reminding me what a peppy song that is and how it does make people feel good and help people remember that we are here in so many ways to change the world, at least change ourselves. And in changing ourselves, we do change the world. Well, talk about changing ourselves. Our guest today is Steve Siskold. Now, he's taught thousands how to use their innate body intelligence, which he coined BQ, to create better health, prosperity, and richer, more authentic relationships. By the way, I have to ask him what BQ stands for. I would assume it's body quotient. But he teaches a whole body approach to create what you want in your life, including transformative breath and movement exercises and conscious communication protocols. Now, it's really interesting, coincidental, that the reason I'm talking on the phone and not in the studio in Los Angeles is because of the incident that I had 2 weeks ago, which almost took my life, but obviously wasn't supposed to, and blah, 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 blah. So my brother, God love him, picked me up in Los Angeles and brought me to Monterey, which is my the town where I grew up, into my mom's home, where we've spent some lovely time as I've recuperated. And just yesterday, while playing with my brother's kids, I twisted my ankle really badly in three places. I didn't even know that was possible. So I can't wait to talk to Steve and say, what's that about? But before we bring Steve on, speaking of my brother and his kids, you know, I have been here. I've tried not to work too much and try and take time to spend with family, which is really important to me, and eat good mama's cooking. She's an Italian and a great cook, and put so much love in the food, and I know that's the main ingredients. But the children are, of course, louder than we are, and I hear their voices all the time, and I just love it. It's been such a pleasure hearing them, playing with them, conversing with them. All is well, except for whatever's going on with my ankle. So it's interesting that the past couple nights, as I lay me down to sleep, I hear their voices, and I hear what they say, the children, these two beautiful angelic daughters that my brother and sister-in-law have. And I hear them, they call me Parrino, which means godfather in Sicilian. Don't know why that strikes me funny. Anyway, and I hear their voices, Parrino, let's do this, Parrino, let's do that. Hey, Parrino, look at this. So, Parrino, have you seen this before? And I also hear them calling their father, whom they call Papa, and their mother, who they call Mama, and Nonna, my mother, their grandmother, Nonna. And I hear, and as I'm slowly drifting off to sleep, I hear so much of what was said during the day by them. Parinu this, and Nonna, thank you, and Nonna, can I have some more food, or all of that. And it's such a beautiful way to go to sleep, I have to say. And what I thought was, how many of us have people that say beautiful things all day, throughout the day, around us? Do we have people that, whether they're talking directly to us or we hear them in the background, are they happy people like these children are? Are they angry? Are they depressed? Are they talking about good things? Do we have the TV on and we're listening to negative things or things happening out in the world? And so when we lay ourselves down to sleep, what are the voices that we're hearing in our head as we recap our day consciously, or better yet, or worse yet, unconsciously? Because I wasn't planning on revisiting all the words that the children said. They just came in my head. I could still hear them talking. So do we go to bed, especially listening to the news or watching a shoot 'em up, you know, emergency room, the ER, something, people dying or depressed or screaming or something, especially since before we go to bed, and are those voices in our head, and does that translate into our dreams? I have to wonder, and I think obviously it's got to be the case. And so today's guest, I'm sure, has a lot to say about that as well, because those voices, I'm sure, translate to emotions in ourselves that get stored somewhere or affect our body and then affect our lives in some way. So I can't wait to hear what our guest has to say about that. But I just thought I'd share that piece, and I'm glad that I had that experience. And now I want to consciously have beautiful voices around me all the time. Maybe I should record them and just play them before I go to bed. So with that, I want to remind everybody that you're listening to Filippo Voltaggio live from Monterey, California, on Life Changes with Filippo on the BBS Radio Network, where we are every Monday night at 7 p.m. And so if you want to listen to this show live, you can catch us every Monday night. Otherwise, our shows are currently free and incomplete at our website, lifechanges.ws. And, of course, you can always keep the conversation going on Facebook and Twitter and YouTube and all these wonderful things that we have to stay in touch. So with that, let me tell you a little bit more about Steve. I started to tell you some of the exciting things that he does. Now, as an author, speaker, and body-centered therapist, Steve Siskold has taught thousands how to use their BQ, innate body intelligence, to create better health, prosperity, and more authentic relationships. Mm-hmm. In his new book, What's Your Body Telling You?, McGraw-Hill, July 2009, Steve teaches us how to breathe into our emotions, release stress from our bodies, and maintain our physical and emotional health. As a result, our careers, personal relationships, and financial situations become easier and more enjoyable. Steve has appeared on CBS, NBC, and has been featured in the Wall Street Journal, the San Francisco Chronicle, and his articles have appeared in over 40 magazines. He is a regular speaker at conferences and events, including World Wellness Day and the Sustainable World Symposium. Steve is a weekly contributor to Psychology Today as well. And something I might add that I happen to know, that he has Kenny Loggins as one of his biggest fans. Kenny Loggins says that Steve Siskold is one of the best facilitators of change I know. Well, with that, we welcome one of the best facilitators of change that Kenny Loggins knows on Life Changes with Filippo. Welcome, Steve.
Hi, Filippo. Thank you.
You know, I just have to laugh. I heard your voice, and it reminded me of a conversation that you and I had earlier. And I don't know if you heard us at the very beginning of the show, but I was talking about my ankle and the fact that I sprained my ankle, which, of course, has no meaning. It's just an accident, right?
But you know, that's a tough one, isn't it? Because, I mean, ultimately, I like to take responsibility. I think I was telling you earlier, I was in Bali having a great time. And I could actually, like, if I had a replay, I could see something upset me. I totally got out of my body, and my foot got caught in a rock, and, you know, I was on crutches for a few days and unhappy. I looked back and went, just another lesson, and, you know, it was racing around in my mind, and I forgot I had a body. And, man, sometimes, I don't know if that's what happened to you, but, man, just in an instant, we can just go into something so fierce in our mind that we forget that our hand's gripping the wheel or our foot stepping in a rock or, you know what I'm talking about?
I do know what you're talking about. As a matter of fact, you talk about life not being meant to be an out-of-body experience. So talk to us about out-of-body and what you mean by saying that.
Well, most of us, you know, we're driving to work. We're thinking about what happened at the breakfast table. We're thinking about what's going to happen at our meeting or the sales call. And we have no idea that this nervousness or this anger from the breakfast table, et cetera, is basically having us grip the wheel like crazy. Our foot's shaking. Our shoulders are up to our ears. We're gritting our jaw. And we get to our presentation. We go, man, I got the worst headache. My jaw hurts. I have no idea why. Huh, weird. Got a weird headache. Well, no, you didn't realize that you were just in your mind thinking about the future and the past, and you weren't in the present experience, which is gripping the wheel. So a lot of what I have in my book and a lot of my techniques get us to remind ourselves to really feel, to breathe, to scan, to be able to notice as I'm driving to an important presentation. Before I got on this show today, I did a couple things to get myself in tune, so that I'm in my body, not thinking about what's after this show or before this show or gripping the phone or gripping the computer, but actually aware of what I call whole body consciousness from head to toe, not just in my brain.
So you're saying that our culture is more IQ-based, and you're saying that there's another intelligence that we should be measuring or talking about, and that is BQ.
Absolutely. I use the term BQ because it's easy to remember. And, you know, basically, your BQ would tell you things. You know, your BQ would, if you had a high BQ, you wouldn't be gripping and getting carpal tunnel at work because you were letting out all the stuff you never said to your boss on your computer mouse. If you had a high BQ, you might not make that investment. You might think twice about going out with that person because your belly's screaming. Your body's trying to tell you something. Your body was there from day one. I call it the library of your flesh. It was there from day one. So anything that happened, even though your mind forgets, the body's still there. And often, you know, like a guy tells me he wants to be successful, and as I have him say it several times, and he's crackling in his voice, I could hear over the phone his body language. And long story short, he didn't know why he couldn't get successful. And when he tuned into his body, that's where the memory is. The issues are in the tissues. And when he got into his body and started breathing, he started to have familiar feelings. I had him say, I want to be successful 5 times in a row. And each time he said it, his body was like, no way. And he couldn't figure out that was. And as he embraced it versus push it away like most of us do when it's uncomfortable, he remembered as a little kid, which his mind had forgotten, but his body remembered. As a little kid, he never got gifts on holidays. And when he would say to his dad, why don't I get gifts? His dad would say, oh, gifts will make you sick. Money will make you sick, son. And that stuck in his body. Even though his mind forgot, when he went to go out into the business world, his body, if you listen to him, you could tell his body was saying, don't come to me because I was told I was going to get sick. And that lives in the body, even though our mind's saying one thing. That's how I got into this work. Like you, I was in business. I was in sales. And I watched the people that were most successful were people that were actually congruent. What they said also was said by their body. The people who said one thing but their body gave a different message were less successful. So that's how I got into the whole field of somatics and somatic recall and body-centered therapy.
Wow, that's interesting. You know, so our body has been there since day one, so it knows all of this. And the parents, for example, that sounds like a horrible thing to say to a child, especially during a holiday when everybody else is getting gifts. At the same time, it might have really been well-meaning in the sense that the dad was trying to impress upon the child that it's not about gifts or whatever. But so it really doesn't matter what the meaning behind it was. It's what the child or what the body of the child understood or made of that, right?
Oh, and absolutely. And to be honest, I said, hey, let's go in a three-way. Let's call your dad right now. And we called his dad, and his dad said, oh, my God, I can't believe you remember that, son. He said, well, the truth is I was embarrassed. I wasn't doing well. And I couldn't afford to get you gifts. Mm-hmm. So rather than the father saying, hey, I feel sad, I feel terrible, oh, I got a pit, the pit of my stomach is just aching, I want to get you a gift, but I can't afford it, he teaches them this nonsense belief. Mm-hmm. And he said it enough that it seeped into this guy's body, even though his mind forgot. You know, Einstein says you can't solve a problem from the same thinking that created it. So the mind can go into all kinds of assumptions and fictional worst fears, but the body remembers. So that's really what I'm talking about, that once he got in touch with his body, he was able to shake some of that energy out, move some of that energy, breathe some of that energy, and then we worked on actually embodying a new belief in the system, not just in the mind. As I get successful, I will be healthy. Well, for about 2 weeks, his body didn't believe it because it had another message. But after about 2 weeks of affirming, not in his mind, but through his whole body, like breathing, I will be successful and I will be healthy. Eventually, his body got it. And people said to him immediately, wow, you look different. You feel much more accessible. And it's in my book. I mean, his business doubled, quadrupled, and he met the relationship of his dreams. And he has a very successful business today.
Mm.
So, you know, it's possible once we get in touch with what I call those viral beliefs that live in our system, we can actually change them. But we've got to go in the body because the mind's going to trick us with all these fictional stories.
You know, Steve, this is really interesting. Now that I'm listening to your story here and tuning into what you're saying, and as I sit here talking to you with my leg raised up that I can't put any pressure on and I have ice on, I it's interesting that I didn't want to take this time off because there was so much to do and I was putting the rest of the team in such a pickle because there was something that we needed to do as a team yesterday, actually, a performance that we were giving or a panel that I was going to monitor and et cetera, et cetera. And the whole team had to, at Life Changes, had to go and do this without me. And that had never happened before. And I was feeling like I shouldn't be taking time off, even though I almost died a week ago, and so I needed the time off and to adjust. But when I fell and twisted my ankle, it was around 6:45 yesterday. And it's interesting that when I spoke to one of the team members, I didn't make the correlation because they were supposed to start at 6 or 6:30. Well, I was told that they didn't actually start until 6:45. And so here I was running around with children, and maybe feeling guilty that they were working and that I wasn't deserving of taking some time off. And so I twisted my ankle to tell myself, you know, you don't deserve this.
And what do you notice as you say that? What comes up for you around that?
Well, I'm sad for myself that I feel like I don't deserve this. And that's been a big thing and definitely why that whole incident happened actually 2 weeks ago, because I've just been working nonstop and thinking I can do this and we've got things to do, places to be, and I've got to make this happen. And I mean, we're all working like that, but I just take things to a whole other level. So I know that that's false, that I do need to take time to myself, and this was the right thing to do, and my ankle can heal now.
Well, you know, the body's so intelligent, and, you know, at some level, I mean, it's amazing some of the instincts. I know for myself, I remember when my body was just screaming one morning, and I just couldn't believe it. And then my mind went into all the fiction, like most of us do. I'm having a heart attack. I'll never be loved again. I don't have a purpose. And then I realized, like, whoa, I've got to, like, get grounded here and go into my body and practice what I preach. And as I actually started breathing deeply and fully into my body, I could feel that need to take a rest, that need to take a break. It was like my body told me it's time to take a break, even though your mind is so strong on getting all this work done. And I actually listened to my body and said, okay, where do I go? And it said India. And I'm like, what? Oh, yeah, not right now. And long story short, I went down to the embassy to get my visa, and it had a big sign, malaria, and my mind said, no way, you're not going to India and get malaria, and I didn't want a malaria shot, so I came home and didn't listen to my body. But the next day, it was so strong that I needed a break, and I should go somewhere exotic, and India was the choice. I went, and within 2 days, I followed my body instincts. I was just walking down a street outside of Bombay, and felt my body pulled towards this street, and I had no idea why. My mind was like, don't go, don't go. But my body instinct said, go. And there was a man standing there who said, Dalai Lama. Oh, Dalai Lama, he's about 14 hours from here. Dalai Lama? Dalai Lama. And he pointed to his scooter, and I got on his scooter, and about 10 minutes later, I was out in a field with the Dalai Lama and about 12 Tibetan monks. And
wow.
Got all the answers to my questions that just 2 days ago I was suffering with. So that's my story, to say, listen to your body. It can take you to some amazing places. But, you know, like everybody else, I could have just gotten into a lot of thinking and worrying, and I wouldn't have found the Dalai Lama otherwise.
Wow. Well, Sina, I know that you say that there's so much data stored in the library of our flesh. I love that line. Now, but this data of the Dalai Lama, that's not in your flesh, so that's your body tuning into something else, right?
Yeah, it was an instinct. I don't know that I have the answer. You could call it intuition. You could call it God speaking to me. But something in me, the first step was for me to stop running that fictional mind. I'm never going to be loved again. Oh, God, my chest hurts. Maybe I'm having a heart attack. Oh, man, you know, I'm purposeless. Who am I? What am I? How am I going to do this? And then finally, making that choice to go into what I call whole body consciousness instead of the mental cognitive IQ consciousness, getting into the BQ started to relax me, started to really point out to me my body needed a rest. Even though my mind was on fire and it looked like you were saying, you know, I got to get this done, I got to get that done, I got to get this. Isn't it interesting how your body intelligence slowed you down? Because it's somewhere innate, that innate intelligence knew that you needed to slow down. Mm-hmm. And somewhere my innate intelligence knew that I needed to get on the floor and breathe to at least have another choice other than thinking my life was ending. And once I did that and I got in touch with, you know, the ability to actually take some time and listen to my body, it's amazing. I've worked with, like you mentioned, you know, rock stars and all kinds of people that just couldn't get an answer, Filippo. They could not get an answer. Why do I have writer's block? Why is this happening? Why can't I get successful? I asked the same question, which is why I named my book what I named it. Hey, let's see what your body's telling you. And boom, they got information that they were not able to access in their mind.
You know, this thing about not being able to stop working, it reminds me of the not being able to stop eating. And so many people say that that's because when some of us were children or our generation, that our parents used to say to us, eat all the food on your plate, there are children starving in other places of the world, and et cetera. And especially me growing up in an Italian environment, which I'm grateful that I did, but my mother would keep feeding our plate until there was no more in the pot or until she was satisfied. So it had nothing to do with my connection with my body. And so I lost that satiation gauge. So in the same way, possibly the work ethic that our parents might have instilled, having been immigrants and all that, was you just work. You don't take vacations. You don't stop. You just work. So how do we find that?
Well, I think the key is that we really need to, I think it's important to put purpose behind things. You know, like, why am I doing this? Is it because I'm feeling lack? Is it because I'm my body's telling me I'm not good enough? Is it because somebody like this fella was told something and then he can't figure it out? Or maybe our dad told us, you know, oh, you're going to be an artist, you'll never fill your fridge that way. And maybe that affects how you do your artwork. It could affect you to be driven like crazy. It could affect you to procrastinate and not do your thing. So again, my experience is that when we go back into the body, we get in touch with so much. I mean, look, Filippo, I'm confident. I'm a musician. I entertain. I tell stories. I do corporate talks. I love being on the media. And yet one time I was on a national show, and when they announced that I was going to be on in 5 minutes, my body started sweating profusely and started to get anxiety. And I'm like, what is going on here? I could not figure it out in my brain because I'm confident and I couldn't wait. Why am I nervous? Mm. And as I took 3 minutes and just breathed, scanned my body from head to toe, and actually let go of the fear thinking and went into what was actually physically happening for me, I was brought back, like that other gentleman, to a cellular memory. When I was young, I grew up in a really close-knit, safe neighborhood. Doors were open to everybody. The first time my cousins and I left the neighborhood, we got beat up. Mm. And by these guys in black jackets and greasy hair like you see in the movies. I had never seen anybody like that in my life. And there's a part of me, even today, that will get blindsided, like, whoa, why am I so nervous? Oh, that's that old memory, that old posture. But you won't find it in the mind. So what I did was I breathed and felt and let my body tell me. And when I let my body do what it wanted, it started to get into a little crouched position. And bingo, I said, oh, my God, I feel like I'm 9 years old on Park Heights Avenue protecting myself. What's the belief there, Filippo? If I go out too far, it's not safe. If I go out to some big adventure, it's not safe. It's what holds so many of us back from success, from expressing our art, our music, our relationship skills, whatever it is. We hold ourselves back because the body has a negative memory, and it will scare us or trick us into thinking it's going to happen again and again and again. But in fact, it doesn't have to happen again.
Wow. And we're here to make sure of that. And so I want to remind everybody that our guest tonight is Steve Siskold, and we're talking about so many things, but mainly his book, What's Your Body Telling You, that's out on McGraw-Hill as of July 2009. Now, Steve can be reached through his website, or you can learn more about him, obviously at our website as well, at www.lifechanges.ws, but you can also go directly to his website at stevesiskold.com. And that's Steve, S-T-E-V-E, Siskold, S-I-S-G-O-L-D.com. I want to remind everybody also that you're listening to us live on the BBS Radio Network, and we're here every Monday night at 7 p.m., and that our shows get archived and are currently available for free in their entirety at www.lifechanges.ws. Now, Steve, this thing about the living outside of our body, I used to think it meant something else, like people are on another planet or in another dimension, and some people maybe mean that. You're not meaning that. You're talking about everyday people having an everyday life, not actually living in their body. And you take it a step further to go on to say that we have been, quote, been indoctrinated out of our bodies. Talk to us about that.
Absolutely. Well, spin and indoctrinated. So I came up with the term spin indoctrinated because, you know, we're taught. I mean, God, I was taught at a young age, if you want to have a wish, hold your breath. What a terrible, terrible message. Hold your breath. I was taught, like all of us, so many things. Somebody steps over you, you're going to not grow. Again, somebody says, I'm hot, mommy, I'm so hot. You're not hot. Oh, I'm not? No, you're not hot. Keep that sweater on. I'm really hot. No, you're not. It's like we're constantly told we don't know what we feel. I'm really upset. You know, the teacher did something to me, and it's scary. The teacher's fine. Go to school. Here's some ice cream. Let's talk. Let's watch some TV. People are at the place where there's just no time or energy to actually listen to someone else's feelings or what's going on. I do a lot of work around children. I'm on a lot of TV and radio talking about our kids because, you know, our kids come to us and say, I mean, I have a client that the kid screams every night, the bath is too hot. And the guy puts his hand in and goes, not too hot. In the meantime, you're sure you put your hand in, it's not hot, but that little body goes in there and comes out red and scalded. So I just think that, you know, most of us, and still today, even the most conscious parents tell me, like, whoa, I didn't realize, you know, we wanted to go out and we just said, look, the babysitter's fine. Maybe we should take a moment and listen to what's going on in our son's body. Maybe the babysitter's not fine. You know, maybe that the kid's afraid to go to school because of a bully. We won't get that information if we keep teaching our kids to stay out of their body. Now, here's a quickie. I went to the beach when I lived on Maui with my friend and his three kids, and three kids were in the car. And the three kids, when we got to the beach, said, we're just going to stay in the van and play with our handheld Game Boy computers. And I was like, are you kidding? Is it to that place where kids don't want to play on a beach with sand and ocean? They actually want to sit in the car and play with a screen? Yes. There are a million people. I was in Japan. There are a million teenagers that never leave their room. 24/7 shut-ins. A million. Out of their body, all day on the computer. Their culture there doesn't allow their parents to force them to go. And they just get food handed to them, and they sit on the computer, and all their life is virtual. That's out of the body. I think we have a lot of that going on here, too. We call it, you know, social phobia. But basically, it's kids addicted to their only place they're comfortable is out of the body. They're not comfortable being in their body. It doesn't feel good.
Wow. You know, I liked a story that you told. I don't remember exactly what it was about. Something about your son coming home with his arm hurting or something. Do you remember?
Oh, yeah, thank you. In the book. Yeah, well, my son came home, actually, where his he was like, I'm going up to my room. And I said, no, you're not going up to your room. I want to know what's up. Oh, nothing. I said, come on, talk to me. And I taught him at a very young age to breathe, to express that he could talk. If he would go up to his room, like a lot of kids, he would get lost in fantasy. He would put on a stereo or a TV or Game Boys or whatever, you know, Sony PlayStation. And then he'd have no chance to ever really feel or express. He would just be building up tension like most of us do. But I instead encouraged him to really breathe and start to tell me what's up. He got on the floor and he started pounding and kicking, and he told me, I'm upset. I took your car and it fell in a ditch and I said, thank you, man. It's okay. It's just a car. Let's talk. But by the time he went up to his room, he had cleared it. He didn't have to carry it. And so many of our kids are carrying stuff so much. They can't tell us we're too busy. We react. It triggers something in us of our childhood. And we really have to be careful about how we're raising our kids to not feel. Because that's why these kids walk in these classrooms and shoot a gun. Because they've been discouraged to feel. They're building tension. They've been abused or hurt or shamed. And one day they just can't take it anymore. And like a pop, you know, a cork pops out of a champagne bottle, all of a sudden they're going crazy. And it's like, oh, he was such a nice, quiet kid. Yeah, but what was he carrying that you never let him express? And one day he just couldn't take it anymore, and he went crazy.
Is that what you mean by when you say we are walking time bombs ready to explode?
You know what, Filippo? Yes, every one of us, including me. If I don't move and breathe and release when I'm tense or something's built up in me, I can let it out on people I love too. You know, a guy's driving all day and he's really in traffic and he's hot and his air conditioner broke and he's building tension and this customer was rude to him and he hasn't been able to say anything. His boss is rude to him. He can't say a word. He gets home and he sees his kid's bike in the driveway and he goes livid. Not right. He's not upset about the bike in the driveway. It's just that he's been carrying this stress. He's a walking time bomb, and the second he could let it out on somebody that he felt safe with, he did. That's the cause of a lot of our domestic abuse and violence and so much between couples and families is that we had not been taught to breathe, to move, to shake it out, to speak to someone, to empty the tank. It builds, and then we explode. Every one of us, me too. If I don't do it, I'm as guilty as anybody else.
Steve, this is so important. Let's go over what you just said that we need to do, because let's just take that scenario, because I'm sure it happens a lot. There is, at least where I live, there is so much traffic, and to get from one part of the city to another, not only are we breathing smog and we're in the traffic and we're bumper to bumper, and then there's the electromagnetic energy in the car that you know, and then there's the person that cuts you off, and then some people are working in jobs that they don't like, and then there's the economy right now, and what all this stuff going on, talk about life changes, and then they get home and their son's bike is in the driveway and they can't pull into the garage easily, and bingo, things happen that are not so pleasant. What does that person need to do? Would just stop the car and what?
Well, that person needs to do what I call the self-evident truth exercise, get set, you know, where you actually take a moment, no matter what, several times a day to notice, am I breathing? Am I breathing consciously? What's the quality of my breath right now? Am I breathing fight or flight, or am I breathing down on my belly? Then you scan your body. Wow, I've really been building up a lot of tension driving like this all day. Name it. My shoulders are tight. My hands are gripping the wheel. Declare it out loud. Name it, and then do something about it. Release, relax, diffuse before you go home. Run around the block. Tell the truth. Call your boss and get it off your chest. But we need to be the source of our own, you know, stress-free bodies, and no one can do that for you. So several times during the day I do that. I just check in with my whole body consciousness. What's the quality of my breath? Oh, wow, I wasn't even breathing. Breathing way up in my chest. Let me bring that down to my belly. I'm so angry about what happened this morning. Okay, where do I feel that? I'm feeling it in my fists. I'm feeling it in my arms. So I start to shake and move and breathe and make sounds and get that out. You know, somebody walks into a temple, they walk into a special place, all of a sudden they get all revered, but yet they walk in their house and they just let the stuff out. Really, do whatever it takes to breathe, move, tell the truth, talk to people, release it before you just unconsciously let it build to the point where you hurt someone else,
well,
emotionally or physically.
You know, Steve, first of all, it's very, very funny, and of course no coincidence, but you have so many aspects of our lives in common. It just fascinates me to be connecting with you as we did earlier, and I can't wait to connect with you more. I'm sure we'll be doing some great things together. But you and I, we both are musicians and so artists, and yes, we've both been in sales and worked for major companies and all, but we also carry that side. I don't know, that should I say artistic or feminine side or something? There's a balance there. Now we could talk like we're talking about this subject, and you know, you got to tell the truth and you got to scan your body, but to people that were raised, you know, a man is a man, and you got to get out there and work, and you don't share your emotions, and you know, stop crying, and big boys don't cry, and all that. They're the heads of their household, and they're trying to do what their parents taught them and what they think a man is supposed to do. I know you work with a lot of clients. A lot of them are artists, but some of them are business people and salespeople and stuff. How do you talk to the people that might think this is silly?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, I led men's groups for 3 years, and I saw a lot of that. You know, the way I would approach it was, look, you did what you needed to do. Your dad taught you that. Your dad slapped you if you cried. Your dad told you you weren't a man. I get it. Don't feel guilty. Don't feel like you did anything wrong. But the truth is, that persona you developed, that survival technique that you did to keep dad from hurting you or thinking, shaming you or yelling at you, or, you know, the coach wanted you to man up, that really was their projection. That was something they needed and they taught you. And you did a great job of what you had to do to survive. Is it working for you now? And the answer is always no. So you have the power to change that. You're the source of that. There are things you can control and things you can't. You couldn't control your dad. You couldn't control your coach. You can't control the TV or the films from telling you what they tell you. But what you can control is that you can breathe, you can be in the moment, you can scan your body, and you can just say, wow, I feel really sad right now. And just let that happen. Try it. And, you know, my workshops were called Man of Power, and the power was in feeling. The power was in really releasing those burdens, and men loved it. So I've worked with, you know, in Iowa and all around the country in different places, and I was in Ohio last week, Iowa 2 weeks ago. And, you know, the one common denominator is people want to be happier. They want more peace. They want more abundance. They want better health. And if it's explained that it's not good for your health to be holding your breath, to hold your belly in, it's not good for your health to be, you know, acting macho when you really want to tell somebody that you're sad. And I think it's changing, you know, slowly but surely. And, of course, some people will never buy into that. But quite a few people are starting to get the idea of emotional intelligence and body intelligence, and that we're more than a brain, and we do have feelings, and it's okay to express them.
Do you think, having worked with as many men as you do, that we're far from men being able to tell their friends, look, I'm going through this, as opposed to just keeping it in?
I think we're a lot better than we were a few years ago. I have to admit, though, that some of the men's groups and some of the men's weekend workshops I don't believe in, because they just reinforce, like, we're men, we're wild, we're animals. And I think there's a piece of that that's important, that you have primal instincts, you have primal feelings. But I find that a lot of the men's work, and a lot of the men's work is beautiful and amazing, but some of the men's work out there just reinforces that macho attitude that, you know, men are right and women are wrong. I just think that the bottom line is it working in your life? Is it working in your life to be macho? Is it working in your life to have your wife afraid of you? You know, is it working in your life to not feel with your children, but to scare them into, you know, not feeling, and then they have to wind up, you know, going to therapy because of that? And I think a lot of men are really opening up to that. There are a lot of people in general are starting to realize that if you bring it in a way that, look, it's not working, just like when you sold business equipment, hey, the machine you have isn't working, I have something that will work. And that's the way I express it. You know, you'll have less, you won't be gripping your computer mouse and getting carpal tunnel. You know, you won't be getting arthritis because you're gripping the wheel all day. You won't be having TMJ and dental problems because you're gritting your teeth. Let it out. Let those tears out. Let those feelings out. And your body will love it. And I think people, especially around health, you know, will buy into that.
Wow. You know, in the few minutes we have remaining here, there's a topic that you dedicate a whole chapter to, which I think is really interesting. And it's about how to boost our relationship mojo. I'm sure that is important to a lot of our listeners. Relationships can be very tricky. Can you talk to us about relationship mojo?
Absolutely. You know, if we're not in touch, Filippo, with what's up for us, how can we tell anybody what's true? I mean, I've worked with, you know, couples where the woman, you know, is sleeping, the guy comes home once a week. He's not an alcoholic. Once a week he goes out for drinks with his friends, and he comes back and he goes to give her a kiss and she freaks out. And, of course, he's saying she's crazy and she's calling me an alcoholic, and she's saying, I don't know what it is. And then when they tune into the body, she gets into her body and she says, wow, you know, I'm getting in touch with something. When it was dark and when my dad came home from the bar, he did things that were uncomfortable. And all of a sudden the guy starts crying because he's like, wow, I thought all along you thought I was a bad guy. No, most of the time in relationships it's all about assumptions, and it's stuff that happened to us in the past that we're not aware of. If we tune into our body, we'd be able to say, honey, when you leave the dishes in the sink every morning right before I go to work, I just want you to know, I get tight, I'm afraid I'm going to get my suit dirty, and it reminds me of my disorganized kitchen as a kid. I've never seen a couple argue once they say that kind of truth. I always,
wow.
Do you want to be right? Do you want to be close? Do you want to be? Do you want to win, or do you want to, you know, be in peace? And I think when we're able to communicate that way in any kind of relationship, in your office, in your business, with your partner, it diffuses the energy, because it's not about you and me. I always say, be allies. Hey, when you do that, you know, like, when, for instance, when I was young, I was accused of something I didn't do, and it really wounded and hurt me. It hurt my family. I was totally innocent, and I got framed for something I didn't do. So I told my partner, I've been in a beautiful relationship for 3 years. I told her right off the bat, I need you to know something. If I tell you I didn't do it, and you say, yes, you did, there's that hurt kid inside that remembers that. And I need to be able to communicate that to my relationship versus have it leak out in all these angry ways.
Yeah, I just had this analogy come to mind about a car. Recently, I borrowed a friend's car, and before I drove off, he said, oh, by the way, there's this over here, and if you do that, then the car won't work. And then there's also this over here, so just be aware of that and just steer clear of that. And as you're saying this, I'm thinking, yeah, you wouldn't give a car to a friend and then have him break down on the freeway because they did something you knew could cause that. So what a beautiful thing to put it the way you put it. Here you are, you're having a relationship, and you're saying, hey, oh, by the way, my car has this over here.
It
could break down during an argument.
Not you. Don't take it personally. It's not about you. This is a trigger and a wound. You know, it's like the guy who got hit on his back 50 times a day by his older brother, and you pat him on the back and say, good job, and he's like, don't touch me. You're like, whoa, what the hell? If he's not in touch with what that is, you're going to think, whoa, what an ungrateful guy. But I've worked in offices, Filippo, where they've actually said, well, you know, I got a truth. Okay, now that we're doing this work, when you hit me on the back and say, good job, it feels bad. It reminds me of my older brother who used to shock me. Thank you, Jack. Man, all this time we thought you were ungrateful. Hey, you know what? We'll find new ways to acknowledge you. That's the kind of work I do.
Well, let me ask you this. Does it ever get to a point where you think, gosh, I don't have time for all of this? Can't people just be normal?
I'm sure people think that way, and I don't know what normal is, but I think that it's important. It doesn't have to take a lot of time. Actually, I think the opposite. I think it takes more time to hold a grudge, to have withholds, to be throwing the papers on the guy's desk because you think he did something, versus just saying, hey, you know, when you dropped that stuff on my desk and you said you need it in 10 minutes, I felt like you punched me in the belly because we both know it can't be done in 10 minutes. Can I have a half hour? That way you're going to get something done. Instead, boss, 10 minutes, can you believe that? And then you walk around the office, can you believe you want? And all that wasteful time, I think it's much more efficient to be able to just say, here's what is. When you do this, this is how it impacts me in my body. And because I'm astute about my body intelligence, most of the time we can get to the source. And when somebody knows the source, you know, like when my girlfriend hears that, she's like, oh, I got it. You know, it's like, I don't have to take it personally. I just get that if you say you did it, you know, I either trust you or I don't, but I hear that it's a wound for you when you're telling the truth and someone says you're not. And it is. I've worked on it. I'm healing it. But I just think it's real to share that with people.
You know, I'm chuckling, and we probably don't have the time for a full explanation on this, but I am very curious. I come from a family of jokesters, and I love it, and I wouldn't change a thing. But what I notice that we do to each other is when we find out we have a wound, boy, we poke at it.
Yeah, I understand. Well, you know, my cousins and I, we goof at each other, we poke at each other. But that's something I choose, you know, like each relationship's different. You know, in my intimate relationship, my business partnerships, people I want to go deep with, that's one thing. My cousins and I wouldn't give that up for anything. It's hilarious, it's funny, we poke, we kid. You know, I think you just make the choice to enjoy that. But if it was something that hurt you, or if it was something like they accused you of something that you know you didn't do, or they told you, you know, that you're not going to get this or you're not going to get that, then, you know, your truest thing would not to be make a joke, but just to go, hey, you know what, that hurt. Or when you say that, I just want you to know that this is how it lands over here. And, you know, I think you can be selective with who you do that with, obviously.
Yeah, interesting. And I also think that sometimes that helps to relieve that body memory or release that body memory too, but with the right people and in the right relationships, absolutely.
Exactly.
I get that. Well, this has been so insightful. I mean, I've learned so much and we've covered so much. Is there anything besides telling everybody the name of the book and your website again, which, by the way, is What's Your Body Telling You? And you can find it out in bookstores and on the internet all over the place, but you can also, of course, go through our website at lifechanges.ws, or you can go directly to Steve Siskold's website, Steve, then SISGOLD.com. Steve, is there anything you'd like to add to all of this?
Yes. Well, first of all, you can also, if it's simpler for you, OneDream, O-N-E, Dream is the name of my company, OneDream.com. And if you come to my site, you'll get 60 free gifts if you buy the book from people like Wayne Dyer and Marcy Shimoff. And also, you'll be able to get a free guided journey to your life's purpose for signing up for my newsletter. My message is really simple, Filippo. Your body is your ally. That rather than looking at, oh, it's not good enough, it's too fat, it's too skinny, it's not right, gee, it hurts, take another perspective from our call tonight and take a moment to really realize your body is your success coach. Look what it did for me, sending me to the Dalai Lama. It can be your, you know, investment coach. It can be your best ally. If you just take a moment, when somebody calls me and they says, hey, you want to invest in this, you want to do this, you want to do that, I used to try to people please and answer immediately. No longer. I take a moment and I go, let me check in. You know what? My whole body's saying no. And I check into that, and I usually get a really good answer, and I'm free, versus doing stuff for other people and then having to regret that I made a commitment for something I didn't want. So use your body as your best ally. I highly recommend it. Your life will change dramatically.
Well, we're happy that we have you as an ally, Steve. Thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, Filippo. Keep up the good singing and the show. I'm looking forward to hearing about all the new things you're doing.
All right. We'll be in touch really soon. Thank you again, Steve Siskold, everybody. Thank you. Well, with that, as if that's not enough how to change your body, change your life, Dorothy Donahue has the segment coming right up called Change Yourself, Change Your World. So, Dorothy, are you with us? Oh. I don't hear her.
I'm here.
Oh, you are there. Okay, very good. Well, okay. Tell us how else we can change ourselves and change our world.
Okay. A few days ago, reminded of an old time. I'd almost completely forgotten about him. And I received an email from one of my Facebook friends reminding me about his work. Long before Esther and Jerry Hicks introduced the world to Abraham and The Secret, there was a man named Earl Nightingale who was a motivational speaker and an author. He was one of only 12 surviving Marines on board the USS Arizona during the attack on Pearl Harbor. After returning from the war, Mr. Nightingale began work in the radio industry, which eventually led to work as a motivational speaker. In 1956, he wrote and recorded a message he called The Strangest Secret. In a short period of time, without advertising or marketing, more than a million copies had been sold, earning for Nightingale a gold record as the largest-selling non-entertainment recording of the record industry. Now more than 50 years later, and countless millions of copies, The Strangest Secret, with its underlying message, we become what we think about, continues to be the leading source of inspiration and motivation for life change. Often imitated, The Strangest Secret remains the top-selling audio message in the personal development, self-help, and inspiration industry. I wonder how different my life would have been had I not been given a copy of this record as a child. It was right after I had back surgery, and I had to be in bed for 3 months. I listened to it and listened to it and listened to it. I'm not saying that I always applied his wisdom when I made my life choices, but obviously I did enough times to have created the kinds of success that I have enjoyed in business. So I want to share with you a particular piece that I remember fondly from The Strangest Secret by Earl Nightingale. George Bernard Shaw said, "People are always blaming their circumstances for what they are. I don't believe in circumstances. The people who get on in this world are the people who get up and look for the circumstances they want. And if they can't find them, they make them." Well, it's pretty apparent, isn't it? And every person who discovered this believed for a while that he was the first one to work it out. We become what we think about. Conversely, the person who has no goal, who doesn't know where he's going, and whose thoughts must therefore be thoughts of confusion, anxiety, and worry, his life becomes one of frustration, fear, and anxiety, and worry. And if he thinks about nothing, he becomes nothing. How does it work? Why do we become what we think about? Well, I'll tell you how it works, as far as we know. To do this, I want to tell you about a situation that parallels the human mind. Suppose a farmer has some land, and it's good, fertile land. The land gives the farmer a choice. He may plant in that land whatever he chooses. The land doesn't care. It's up to the farmer to make the decision. We're comparing the human mind with the land because the mind, like the land, doesn't care what you plant in it. It will return what you plant, but it doesn't care what you plant. Now let's say that the farmer has two seeds in his hand. One is the seed of corn, the other is nightshade, a deadly poison. He digs two little holes in the earth, and he plants both seeds, one corn, the other nightshade. He covers up the holes, waters, and takes care of the land. And what will happen? Invariably, the land will return what was planted. As it's written in the Bible, "As ye sow, so shall ye reap." Remember, the land doesn't care. It will return poison in just as wonderful abundance as it will corn. So up come the two plants, one corn, one poison. The human mind is far more fertile, far more incredible and mysterious than the land. But it works the same way. It doesn't care what we plant, success or failure, a concrete worthwhile goal or confusion, misunderstanding, fear, anxiety, and so on. But what we plant, it must return to us. You see, the human mind is the last great unexplored continent on earth. It contains riches beyond our wildest dreams. It will return anything we want to plant. Thank you, Earl Nightingale, and thank you, dear audience, for listening tonight. Plant good seeds. And until next week, please remember that you are the power in your world. You are the guru you've been waiting for. You are the one who can end your suffering. And you can only do this by beginning a love affair with you. So let us choose to become very conscious co-creators by making the most elegant choices possible. And let's never forget that we are powerful beyond measure and that we are love, we are lovable, and we are love.
Thank you, Dorothy Lee Donahue. And with those beautiful words, we bring to a close another episode of Life Changes with Filippo. I want to thank you all for joining us and remind you all to stay in touch with us on our website at lifechanges.ws and, of course, on Facebook, et cetera, et cetera. I am Filippo Voltaggio, and it has been my pleasure being of service by hosting Life Changes tonight. I, along with our segment hosts and producer, Dorothy Lee Donahue and Mark LeJour, and our engineer, Seth Hendrick, We thank you for joining us and being part of the show and being part of the change we all wish to see in the world. Ciao, everyone.
You have been listening to Life Changes. Join us here every Monday night at 7 p.m. Pacific Standard Time and visit us on the web at lifechangeswithfilippo.com. That's Filippo, F-I-L-I-P-P-O. And follow our community on Facebook at Life Changes with Filippo. Join us here next week as we consciously embrace and explore the only constant, life changes.